I'd like to call this meeting to order. This is the Senate State Affairs Committee hearing. Today is February 23rd, 2012. Time is about 9:03 in the morning. We have with us Senator Geisel, Senator Meyer, myself, Wilkowski. Today we have one bill and two resolutions before us. The first is Senate Bill 178, which would create an Alaska Operating Endowment Fund as a depository for the state's savings to generate revenue for the benefit of future generations of Alaskans. Second item is Senate Concurrent Resolution 22, which would establish an Alaska Arctic Policy Commission. And the third is Senate Concurrent Resolution 19, which would designate September 24, 2012 as United States Marshals Day. We do have some time constraints today. We have an early floor session at about 9:45, so we don't have a full amount of time today. But we'll begin with Senate Bill 178. This is the first hearing on the bill. It's sponsored by the Senate Finance Committee. We have Senator Stedman with us and his aide, Darwin Peterson. Senator, welcome to the committee. And put yourself on the record and tell us about your bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bert Stedman, Senator for District A. And today what we have to bring before the committee is Senate Bill 178. And if I could give you just a little bit of background on the concept of what we're doing, and then I'll talk a little bit about the specifics. But as we have amassed multi-billions in excess liquidity for the state of Alaska outside of the permanent fund, we've got a unique opportunity that the state of Alaska has never faced before, and that opportunity is to create a fund source for future operations of the state. If we back up a decade, even a decade and a half, or quite frankly even 5 years ago, the discussions in the building was, when will the legislature go into the permanent fund, remove revenue to run the state, and or risk the state dividend to the people out of the permanent fund for the operations of the state? Well, as we've fast-forwarded through that last 5 years, it put us in a position today where we've got excess liquidity that we could set aside to create an endowment for the operations of the state. And this concept then would take roughly $15 billion, and all these numbers again are subject to the committee process and the process within the legislature, but the bill as submitted would roughly target $15 billion to set aside, allow expenditures to come off of that, or a revenue stream of 4.5% a year for the trailing 3 years ending value. Those funds then would just go into the general fund if needed. The legislators at the time in the future would not have to take that 4.5% if they don't want to, or if it's not needed. But if it is needed, they could take up to that, and then they would be blocked from further appropriations into that fund. So what that would do, Mr. Chairman, is give the legislature in the future some flexibility. They would have 4.5% of that three-year market value coming into the general fund, and it may be school funding, it may be the university, it may be the HESS budget, it could be capital projects, it could be whatever is needed at the time, and give them full flexibility to meet the needs of the state. But the other avenue that is very appealing to a lot of my constituents is it would block future legislators from appropriating billions and billions of our savings and expensing it out in 4 or 5 years, leaving the state in a position where we have virtually no cash reserves other than the permanent fund, and at a time possibly in the future when we have a revenue source squeeze. And as we all know, coming off of oil, we're subject to market price fluctuations of staggering proportions from year to year, and we're struggling with production coming out of our oil fields. Also, it would force the sitting legislature in the future, if revenue got squeezed, ongoing revenue got squeezed, and they went into the endowment for the 4.5%, after that they would have to sit down and take a look at the operating budget, and it would force the tough decisions to pull back expenditures. The easiest decision to make is not to pull back pull back expenditures and just appropriate the monies that are available on the table, putting off the tough decisions for either a future legislature or putting it off. Well, with these amount of savings we have, we could put it off for several years and put us to a position where we run out of cash. We actually end up what they call cliffing, or we end up with huge reductions that would be needed in the operating budget. I think, Mr. Chairman, this is a unique opportunity for us to permanently protect the dividend stream of the Alaska Permanent Fund, help guide future legislators in protecting the vast quantity of assets that we've set aside and saved, all of us here in this room over the last several years, and then still leave the flexibility on the table for future legislators to appropriate the funds when needed to the areas around the state that are needed at the time. The fiscal note it has some pretty substantial numbers in it, but we are already managing these monies today, so it's really just a way of putting an envelope around within the Department of Revenue around these funds. And that, Mr. Chairman, pretty much sums up the bill. It's a point, I think, in time where this discussion needs to take place in the legislature here, and collectively between all of the committees and the members try to decide how we're going to protect these savings. We don't know who's coming back in front of us, but there's been times in the past when there's a substantially larger spending appetite in this building than there is funds available, and clearly this would help neutralize some of that. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just open it up for questions.
All right. Thank you, Senator. And let me just mention that we've been joined for some time now by Senator Kukesh and Senator Pasvan. Do you have questions? Yes, Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Stedman, I'm looking at a chart that was provided in our materials.
Mm-hmm.
And point number 5 on the chart says future returns are based on 2011 Callan capital market assumptions and median expected returns.
Mm-hmm.
As I have been sitting in on Senate finance meetings, I've been listening to discussion by committee members on the Finance Committee questioning whether the Callan assumptions were a bit high. I see that the earnings assumption is 7.5%. Could you speak a little bit to that?
Yes, let me back up a little bit. The basic allocation here, and again, it's all subject to change, but the basic allocation would be 60% equities and 40% bonds, which is kind of a standard balanced portfolio. Nothing too elaborate. The forward expectations from Cowen in the financial markets have been lowered over their view for the next decade. So as you take out a time window, say a 5 years, or even in their presentation, 10 years, their expectations are lower than they have been in the last 40 or 50 years in a time frame. So by capping the expenditures at 4.5%, anything above that basically would be reinvested, assuming you took the 4.5, would be reinvested. So over time, you should be able to keep this inflation-proofed. In other words, we should have a real return of 4.5 plus inflation. There may be times in the future that expectation doesn't take place, that you actually have an erosion of your principal. But on average, over a few decades, we should be able to have earnings to inflation-proof and protect this portfolio. Cowan's concern over the next several years, maybe 2-3 years time window, is the bond market yields have been so suppressed that when interest rates rise, the bond market's going to have substantial hemorrhaging, basically get slaughtered like the stock market did at the turn of the century and then in 08. So that would be a management issue for Department of Revenue to deal with. There's inflation-proof tips or inflation-proof bonds, government bonds, and maneuvers they can do to protect that. But we selected 4.5% payout as a starting discussion point. I think a 6 or 5.5 or too high, and maybe a 3-4% might be on the low side. So it was just a target that we thought we could maintain over time, and it may not be over time in the next 2 years or 3 years. So I think that's the best way to try to tie in Cowan's, for those that weren't at the presentation at Finance, Cowan's expectations.
Senator Meyer has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess this means no Senate Finance meeting this morning. I have a bill up in your committee at 9 o'clock.
Mr. Chairman, I have taken extraordinary measures to ensure that Senator Meyer's bill is going to have swift action before I even get up there.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, I like this bill. I like this concept. This reminds me of the PMB that we talked about in 2004. Mm-hmm. Of course, back then we didn't have the surplus that we have now, the $15 billion that you're talking about. I guess my only concern is that when we do the budget, what price of oil are we using? Is it $100, $109? I don't remember. It's just that, you know, right now with the tensions going on in Iran and et cetera, it looks like the surplus will continue for some time, but that could change quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And if the price of oil did go below what we budget, and with the production in the decline, I don't know if we want to tie up all of our savings, because our operating budget is about $8 billion, and I think you're projecting here that it wouldn't be till 2022 or 2023 that we would see $1 billion coming back. So I guess that's my question is, I frankly don't know what price we're using for oil for the 2012 budget and what we're projecting use for the 2013 budget. And then I guess the other question I'd have is, should we, rather than set up this fund, try to clean up some of our debt first? Although I know we're in pretty good shape on our debt, but we are still building more schools, and we still have a huge unfunded liability in our pension plan.
Yeah, through the chairman, to respond to that. The initial payouts, even though the schedule here in the bill shows, you know, the first payout of 16, that can be modified where you can have an initial payout per year at 4.5%. You just use your initial balance, your $15 billion, you know, as your number. So you couldn't go over that. So we could work those kind of details out as we go forward. Clearly, there's concern dealing with our break-even oil price and our production, because as our production volume declines, it almost exponentially pushes out our break-even oil price. So that is a concern. But on the other hand, I would like to put on the table a counter would be that it would force budget discipline. It would force the legislature to look at the expense side and not just go in and spend, you know, billions of dollars in capital and operating and ignore that situation. We have more than $15 billion laying around in cash, and then that $15 billion is open for discussion. We just needed a starting number that could be adjusted as the legislature, you know, sees fit on how to structure this. I thought starting out at $15 billion is a good number in that it parks and protects most of our savings, but we still would have the ability then to continue to build savings outside of these funds, you know, or this endowment to help with our operating budget. The retirement system issue would have to, I think, be a separate discussion coinciding at the same time. So, as an example, if if the legislature decides that they want to put $2 billion in a retirement fund, maybe we move $2 billion down on this side. There has to be a balance. And then dealing with the potential retirement, early retirement or calling of our debt obligations, I think that also would be a discussion at the same time. So this policy call wouldn't be put in place in a vacuum. We would take some of those larger issues, put them all on the table at the same time, and say, you know, do we want to retire debt and how much? Do we want to do an equity infusion on a retirement account and how much? And then what is left? How much do we want to try to protect in savings? And then how much do we want to have in cash? Because we don't want the revenue department to be starved with liquidity. And we want them to manage estate finances and not be concerned about managing the portfolio to make payroll. So there's a lot of balancing that needs to take place. So you cannot put this policy forward in isolation.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, as I mentioned, I like this concept. It does force us to be disciplined in our expenditures, and I think that's all good. But do you know off the top of your head, because I know what price of oil we use to do our budget?
109. That's the projected revenue stream. A little over that. As far as the target, the break-even rate, I would want to check. It's in around 80, depending on if you take in capital budget or just the operating budget and what you want to measure it against. Clearly, our break-even interest or break-even oil price, it would be beneficial to the state to have a lower break-even oil price. There's no doubt about that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just curious, have you talked to legal? How secure is this, or how protected is this fund? Could the legislature in a year just decide to go in and appropriate an extra $1 billion from it? Or have you talked to legal about that?
This would be in statute, so the future legislature could just change the statute and then ignore it. Of course, if the legislature's so inclined and wanted to put forth in their deliberations a request for a constitutional budget amendment to lock it up like the permanent fund, I'd be tickled pink to write a letter of support for that. But that's something I think that needs to be worked out with the legislature as we go forward. I thought it might be a little I thought it'd be a better policy discussion going forward if it was just in statute, and then if collectively we thought that it should go to the people, we should take it to the people.
And is this, I know we've talked a lot in the past about one legislature binding a future legislature. Mm-hmm. Are we running into this at all? I mean, I know you have a thing in here about this not being a dedicated fund, but is this and have you discussed this with legal about whether or not this, because we are sort of cordoning off this fund, and I'm just curious if you've had discussions with legal about whether there could be a challenge there.
I think the lawyers could probably challenge anything, but I do not have a legal opinion on that, Mr. Chairman. It's clearly not a dedicated fund in that the revenue stream comes in as just general funds to be appropriated to any direction the legislature at that time wants to do. And I recognize the prohibition of dedicated funds within the Constitution.
Okay. Other questions? Okay, seeing none. Thank you, Senator. And
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'd like to call up, we have Angela Rodell from the Department of Revenue. If you could come forward, put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Angela Rodell. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Revenue.
Did you have any comments you wanted to give on this bill, or are you just here for questions?
I'm just here for questions. I believe you all, and I wanted to apologize for getting you a bad fiscal note, but I believe you now all have the corrected fiscal note, which has an initial appropriation request of $3,150,000. associated with this bill. And as Senator Stedman said, most of this money is already being spent by the other funds that would then be moved into this. One other thing I would like to note on the fiscal note is that the asset allocation contemplated by the bill would require more external management because more of the monies would be moved into an equity position, and currently we're probably about 75% fixed income, which is managed in-house, versus 25% equities, which is external. So as we would move these funds over and as things would mature, we would be moving them into a more active external management position, which is why you see the increase in service fees in the outer years. And I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you. So, yeah, Senator Meyer.
Yeah, just briefly, currently, if I recall, it's been a while since I've been on finance, but our statutory reserves account is invested two ways, one more aggressively, one more conservative. One, I'm assuming, gets probably 3 or 4%, and one probably gets 7 or 8%. So this would be taking that fund in total and now investing it more like the permanent fund, which I'm assuming would be more on the aggressive side. So we would need to be prepared, just like the permanent fund, to go a year or two, perhaps, and have losses, and then hopefully other years can have gains up in the double digits.
That is correct, sir.
And our debt ratio is pretty good. I see we're a triple A, so we must be pretty good.
We are. We're very good.
Good. Thank you.
Yes, Senator Passman.
You know, to some extent, the fund that would be set up here, I think, would be an appropriate subject. There was a bill that I happened to sponsor that the Institutional Prudent Investor Fund, that if you do have an endowment and there is a reduction because of fluctuation in the market, where it allows a prudent investor or management of that fund to distribute monies even if it invades the corpus, because that, with the market downturn in 2008-2009, that became a serious concern for many investors. So anyway, there's also, and I think that when it comes to true risk, there's an article coming out in the February 27th edition of Fortune by Warren Buffett where he discusses true risk over time and looking at categories, commodities, bonds, equities, where in essence your real risk of investing is in bonds as compared to equities. And so anyway, I think that a greater concentration in equities is where we should go. So that's just my personal belief.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Does the administration have a position on the bill?
Not at this time.
Okay. Just so I understand the fiscal note, is it basically fair to say that we're spending this money but just somewhere else right now?
Correct.
So there's no, for the state as a whole, even though it says $3+ million going up over time, it's just basically taking money out of one pocket. That's money you would have to spend somewhere in another account somewhere.
Correct.
Okay. And then, have you had any analysis done on whether or not this, do you have an opinion on whether this will be a dedicated fund or this approaches the definition of a dedicated fund?
I can't say that I have an opinion, and we have not done any analysis on that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Other questions from the committee? Okay. Seeing none. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Let's move on to public testimony. I don't believe we have anyone online. Is that correct? We have no one online. Is there anyone in the room wanting to testify? Okay, no one in the room wanting to testify. We'll close public testimony. Any final questions for the bill sponsor? Okay, seeing none, we're going to set this bill aside. If members, I'd like to move this next week. If members have proposed amendments, if you could get them to Michelle by noon on Monday, February 27th, we would appreciate it. Okay, thank you. And with that, we'll move on to Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 72, which would establish an Alaska Arctic Policy Commission to help create a state Arctic policy and address the many issues raised by the changing Alaska or Arctic landscape. We have Wes Eiler from Senator Stedman's office to present the resolution. Welcome to the State Affairs Committee. And if you could put yourself on the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Weston Eiler, staff to Senator Bert Stedman, Thank you for hearing the resolution this morning. Senate Concurrent Resolution 22 would establish the Alaska Arctic Policy Commission within the legislative branch. Over the course of 2 years, the 16-member commission will engage state government, communities, and stakeholders in northern waters and Arctic issues. SCR 22 continues the legislature's work to establish an official Arctic policy for the state of Alaska and address the diverse set of issues facing our state with changes in the Arctic. In January of 2012, the Alaska Northern Waters Task Force presented its findings to the legislature. The task force identified opportunities and challenges in a changing Arctic and made recommendations in six policy areas, specifically governance, oil and gas development, marine transportation, fisheries, infrastructure, and research. This report constitutes the most detailed assessment of Arctic issues by the legislature to date, but much more work is needed to fully assess and bring out and kind of flesh out the multiple issues identified by the task force. One of the task force's principal recommendations is the establishment of a commission to develop a comprehensive and strategic Arctic policy for the state of Alaska. Most northern nations and even territories already have established Arctic policies to help address changes and development in the Arctic region. Alaska is enormous, has an enormous stake in the changing Arctic, and as the jurisdiction that makes the United States an Arctic nation, the state of Alaska needs to do the same in adopting a strategic and targeted Arctic policy. Advancing Alaska's interest in the Arctic will require some sustained efforts by state government. This resolution is a targeted next step to continue the legislature's work in this area and help position Alaska at the forefront of our nation's Arctic policy. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you. Questions from the members of the committee? Senator Geisel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a great idea, great resolution, but I do have a couple questions about membership. I'm looking at page 3, line 14. So my first question pertains to item G. It says one member from local government, that's great, or an association of a local government. Can you tell me what that is? An example, perhaps, or a few examples?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Senator Geisel, specifically speaking to that, I believe that was included to allow flexibility in the unorganized borough, specifically in areas where there might not be a formal municipality or other local government entity. So basically just built-in flexibility. Again, these would all be appointed jointly by the Speaker of the House and the Senate President, but I believe that language is mostly there just to allow for that flexibility for the presiding officers.
All right. Second question is line 17I, item I. One member representing an international Arctic organization.
Mm-hmm. Yes, through the chair, Senator Geisel, one of the things the task force encountered is there's a multitude or plethora of international multi-stakeholder groups, whether it be the Arctic Council, Circumpolar Inuit Conference. There's just a variety of organizations that are either working or to address these issues on a variety of different scales. Specifically the portion of the resolution you're talking about would basically allow for incorporation of a representative from one of those agencies or organizations, whether it be the Arctic Council, it could be PENWAR, it could be just a variety, or again, at the discretion of the presiding officers, but basically incorporate a representative of another organization looking at these issues on a different scale, just to incorporate them in the state's work.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Other questions from the committee? Okay, I don't see any. Let's go to public testimony. Do we have anyone online wanting to testify? Hearing none. Do we have anyone in the room wanting to testify? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony. And any final questions for the resolution sponsor? Okay, seeing none, it's a fairly meaty resolution. We're going to hold it over and give members an opportunity to propose amendments. If you have amendments, if you could get them to Michelle by Monday, February 27th at noon, we would appreciate it. Thanks again, Wes. Okay, well, let's now move on to Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 19, which would proclaim September 24, 2012, as United States Marshals Day. Senator Dyson is here with Chuck Kopp, and welcome to the committee. If you could put yourself on the record and tell us about your resolution.
Fred Dyson, Senator from Eagle River, with me, my Chief of Staff, Chuck Kopp, and I want to thank the committee for hearing the bill, or the resolution.
Oh, please proceed. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. In 1789, the federal government created the U.S. Marshals Service, and after the Alaska Purchase, the in a brief time when Alaska was under the jurisdiction of the Revenue Marine Service and in the Army, the marshals were given the job of law enforcement here in Alaska, and I think this year is their 128th year in Alaska. And the what we're doing is just setting aside this day, September 24th. It's the as Marshals Day, and it's a one-time only. This was brought to us by law enforcement people and wanting to recognize these guys and give an opportunity on that particular day to let folks know the contribution these folks have made and continue to make. If you read the backup material, you'll see that I think eight of them have died here on service in Alaska, and it's a proud tradition, and they are, you'll see also in the backup literature the several programs that they work with the our own law enforcement folks, and I understand in quite a collaborative way, sex offense registers, fugitive and compliance, and in fugitive apprehension, and the literature we were given shows that they've picked up about 5,000 people on warrants that were either hiding out or in rare cases didn't know there was a warrant out for them, and these guys picked them up and deported about 250 of them, as I remember, to other jurisdictions outside where their indictments were. So it's one of those deals where we take a little effort here to recognize some people that have made a huge contribution, and I'm, like a couple other things we've done, I'm quite surprised at how grateful the folks are who have served for this bit of recognition and a little bit of a chance for their mission here and what they've accomplished to be recognized. We'd be glad to answer any questions. Or Chuck, do you want to add anything or subtract?
I mean, Mr. Chairman, just on the date itself, September 24th, that was the date that the United States Congress appointed the U.S. Marshal Service on September 24th, 1789. So that's where that date comes from.
Great. All right. Thank you, Senator and Chuck. Do we have any questions from the committee? Okay. Seeing none, looks like we have one person online, and that's Jimmy Johnson from Anchorage. Jimmy, are you there?
I am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I see you're down as being able to answer questions. Did you have any testimony you wanted to give?
I think Senator Dyson and Mr. Kopp did very well covering it. And, yeah, I'd be pleased to answer any questions if anybody has any.
Okay. You might ask him what his job was.
Yeah, and I have you identified as representing the U.S. Marshals?
Correct.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, seeing none. Anyone else online wanting to testify? Seeing none, anyone in the room wanting to testify? Okay, I don't see anyone. We'll close public testimony. Final questions for the bill, for the resolution sponsor? Okay, I don't see any. It's a fairly simple resolution. We've got a version M that's before us.
M is in Mary,
yes. And what's the will of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I would move that we move Senate Concurrent Resolution 19 version /M from this committee to the next committee, a referral with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, the bill is moved. If you could please take a moment and fill out the individual recommendation sheet. Thank you, Senator Dyson. Thank you, Chuck.
And thank you.
With that, we're adjourned.